You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
We're here now with our fifth batter in the all-star lineup of the BOA Audio Baseball Special. He was on just a few short weeks ago, really, the beginning of February, so it's exciting to bring him back, and we came right down to the wire here, but we have so much to talk about. His team's seen a real resurgence in the last year, and I'm really excited to hear what he has to say about that. He is, of course, one half of the tremendously awesome UFO Mystic website, one of the best websites out there. Go there for your UFO news. It's updated pretty much every day, I believe, at least once a day. Has the best UFO news out there. It's where I go to get my UFO news. It's UFO Mystic. And, of course, he's the author of the tremendous book Project Beta, which we talked about at length quite a while ago, and maybe someday we'll rehash the whole Project Beta story, because I kind of interviewed him back when I was just a scrappy young lad, and I probably can bring some new questions to the table on Project Beta. Irregardless of all that, our guest here is, of course, the esteemed Greg Bishop. Greg, welcome back to the show.
Oh, I'm esteemed. Thanks.
Yeah, you like that? And I should point out that earlier in the show, Paul Kimmel called you one of the nicest person he's met in the UFO world.
I don't know if I like that, but, you know, I'll
take it. I guess we'll pass that along to Kimmel.
No, you know what? He stayed here for about a week and a half, and we had a lot of fun. It's unfortunate it wasn't during the baseball season, so he'll be out here for the retro conference about a week after that. I think there will be some Dodger games, and we're going to go.
Nice. I'm jealous already. We kind of scratched the surface on it at the end of the last interview, and I was kind of chomping at the bit to ask you, and now that we're here at the second annual baseball special, we can dig into the big, big offseason for your L.A. Dodgers. It must be exciting for you, because you've been supporting this team through thick and thin for quite a while now, and all of a sudden, they're the hot team now going into 2008. They're one of the hot teams. So I guess talk a little bit about, Joe Torre coming to the Dodgers, and, of course, the Andrew Jones signing as well, kind of fall under the radar. But those two big changes for the Dodgers in the offseason and what you're looking forward to here in 08.
You know, I did not realize that people thought that the Dodgers were the hot team. Now, people, the fans of the Dodgers, actually, they did some sort of survey, and during one of the spring training games, I was watching this graphic appear on the screen. How many games do you think the Dodgers should win this year? It was like 60 to 80, and about 20% of the people voted for that. You know, 80 to 90, maybe another 30% of the people voted for that. No, not even that. Whatever the percentages were, the people that expected the Dodgers to win over 93 games or something like that, or 90 games, mm-hmm. was something like 85. It was a little over 80%.
Wow.
There's a lot of expectation. And I think that's mainly because of what you said, the signings of Joe Torre and Andrew Jones. And I was looking at the spring training records, which they always say they don't mean anything, you know.
Yeah.
The Dodgers have one of the worst spring training records this year.
Oh, no. Well,
there might even be worse than, I think it's either the Devil Rays or the Marlins. I mean, I think it's the Devil Rays have, like, almost the same bad record for this spring. No, I don't, you know, people don't say it means anything. But all the teams that were good last year are still good. The Yankees have a great record, spring training record. The Sox, of course. Even Chicago has a decent one. The Cubs, I mean.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have high expectations. I have hopes. I'm glad everybody thinks they're going to do real well. I think so too. And I think, you know what? It's really weird. My hope is a lot higher than my think. After following this team for, you know, not a whole hell of a long time, maybe 10 or 12 years, I get this fatalism where you get to this point where you protect your emotions by saying, nothing's going to happen anyway. So that you're surprised and delighted when something does happen and it turns out great.
Yeah.
Which it does, you know, it does more often than not for the Dodgers. I guess I have to admit it. Although last year they kind of dropped in the second half. They had the best record in baseball, I think, up to the break or close to it. And then after that, they went in a tailspin. In the last month or two, they went in a tailspin. They ended up, they were in first place in the Western Division. They ended up in fourth place.
Oh, man.
At the end of the season.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
And it was, you know, everybody was talking about the clubhouse atmosphere and all that, and it's always that question of does chemistry beget winning or is winning beget chemistry? It's a chicken and the egg thing. But I tend to think that winning begets chemistry. At least get along with everybody. Then when you start winning, yeah, the chemistry comes.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of dawned on me, too, the same way with the Dodgers becoming the hot team. It seemed like, you know, probably because the Torrey signing was so long ago, really, in real time now, that, you know, everyone was sort of excited when it happened, and then there was, you know, the steroid thing, and everything kind of everyone kind of forgot that there was going to be another baseball season coming. And then, you know, I was watching ESPN last night, and Tim Kukerchian, who's pretty much my favorite guy on Baseball Tonight, he's the most one I respect the most, he picked the Dodgers to win the NL West. So I was like, you know, this isn't just me and the UFO folks who are on the baseball special. It's kind of sweeping around baseball. So it is pretty exciting to see that rejuvenation. It reminds me a lot of the Cubs last year when Pinella came aboard and people sort of thought they'd turn it around. Now what sort of intangible do you think that Torrey is going to bring to this team that's going to turn them, you know, into a playoff team, you know, in one season? Because I know you said there was this clubhouse strife, but I sort of only know it from the peripheral end. You probably know it because you're right there in the heart of the city and stuff. But what do you think he's going to bring that's going to turn this team around?
You know, about that clubhouse fighting between the younger and the older players?
Yeah.
I have a very sneaking suspicion that was something like, you know, 75-80% media created.
So that's usually the way it is, too, it seems.
Yeah, I think that they probably did fall apart over generational or age lines.
Yeah.
But the thing was that I think that Grady Little, such an easygoing guy that he probably just kind of let it, whatever happened, happened. He didn't kind of, you know, call everybody in the room and say, look here, dudes.
Yeah.
You know, like Tommy Lasorda used to, he'd actually say, look here, if he thought they were doing badly, he'd tell them in no uncertain terms. And if he thought they were doing great, he'd tell them in no uncertain terms as well. He got criticized for running on the field and jumping and screaming when they won.
Yeah.
Which I think is stupid. Not running on the field, but being criticized for that. You know, whatever you may say about Lasorda, he was good baseball mind, great baseball mind, still is, and probably one of the best managers ever. Just because of the way, you know what a manager does? They create chemistry. A good one does.
Yeah.
Through, you know, just managing personalities. That's why I was in management a long time ago, like, you know, when I was just out of college. I was at a job for a year and they put me in management. And after a while, people said that they liked me best as a manager, basically because I stayed out of everybody's way. And when there was a problem, tried to get involved and not confrontational with people, unless they were confrontational. And, you know, that's a really small microcosm of what a baseball manager has to do. He's taking, you know, well, at the time of the game, you know, 15 or 20 egos and trying to juggle them.
Yeah.
And if you can do that effectively, then you know, it's like tuning, you know, doing little tune-ups on a machine. And I think Torrey is generally recognized as being a good person at doing that, and that's really what the Dodgers needed at the end of last year. You know, clubhouse chemistry or not, I mean, everything that goes into making a team what it is, you know, the manager is there daily, and he probably has the most important role in doing that. And Torrey being there, I think, will help that quite a bit because he doesn't take any crap from people.
Yeah, and what's the pitching situation like for the Dodgers? Are they strong in that department?
Yeah, they're looking really strong. I mean, of course, Brad Penny's coming back, which, you know, unequivocally people say he's probably one of the best pitchers right now. They got Derek Lowe and a Boston pickup from a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? Vlad Guerrero got a home run off him yesterday in the exhibition game down in Anaheim. There's an Anaheim game yesterday, three Boston games, one today at Dodger Stadium, one tonight, one tomorrow at the Coliseum, which is something we can talk about, and then on Sunday they're playing them at Dodger Stadium, which I actually have tickets for, and I wanted to go see them play Boston because I haven't seen that since there was an interleague game about 5 years ago out here.
What do you think merits discussion on the Coliseum? You sound excited about this, just that they're playing a game there or what?
Yeah, well, do you know why they're playing the game there? From it being a big stunt.
Now I'm on the. I figured it was just one of those things to, you know, as a creative sort of thing at the end of the, between the spring and the regular season, you know, like this Japan.
That's probably the main reason for it. But it's the 50th year anniversary of the Dodgers coming to L.A.
Oh.
And in 58. And until 1961 or 62 or something like that, they played at the Coliseum, the L.A. Coliseum, where they used to have the Rose Bowls till they moved it to the Rose Bowl. Mm-hmm. Way, way back when, because it's right next to USC there. They actually took one end of the field and turned it into a baseball field, and it was built for the Olympics. I forget when 1920 something Olympics.
Weird.
So it's a track and field stadium, but they didn't have their stadium finished yet. They were still building Dodger Stadium. So for three or four seasons, they played in the LA Memorial Coliseum. They blocked off one end of the field. Well, not blocked off, but they some groundskeepers went out and made it into a baseball field. And the thing seats like 110,000 or something.
Yeah, it's a pretty massive place.
Yeah, I think I went to a Rolling Stones concert there once, and there was over 100,000 people there. It was frightening.
Yeah, wow, that's a little that would be pretty weird. So which games are you going to? You're going to go to that one?
No, I couldn't get tickets for it. It sold out in like an hour or two.
100,000 tickets sold out, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, at least, according to Ticketmaster and the Dodgers and all that, of course, there's a lot of, people are auctioning them on eBay and Pub and stuff like that. And I could have gotten some if I wanted to pay, a couple hundred dollars for a pair of tickets way up in the nosebleeds at the other end of the stadium.
Wow, I hope they televise that game, because I bet it's going to be
They're going to televise, I guess MLB TV will, but the local stations here are going to televise it. And it's funny because one end of the field and the edge of the track was where home plate was. Left field, they had to put up a fence, like the 60-something foot high fence, because the thing was only, 220 feet or something from home plate. And then right field went, for 100 yards to the right. they had these huge crowds. They did get, 80, 100,000 a couple times for games there.
Wow.
And, it was just a strange, weird, chapter in the Dodgers' history, at least as far as where they played. Everybody thinks Dodger Stadium, first it's Ebbets Field, then they moved to Dodger Stadium. No, for two or three years they played in the Coliseum.
Yeah, that's I think they did that sort of thing with the Florida team, too. They were playing on where the Dolphins play or something like that for a while. And the Washington team, too, when they first moved to Washington. Weren't they playing, at a football stadium?
Yeah, I think so. And for the longest, the Padres, San Diego, they built their stadium in the 60s, I think, late 60s. I can't remember when they turned from a Pacific League team into a Major League team. Actually, Ted Williams started out on the San Diego, not the Padres, I think. I think they were called the Padres back then, but they were Pacific League team. But they built that stadium. It was called Padres Stadium, I think, and then it was Jack Murphy Stadium, and now it's something else. But sometime in the 80s, they bowled it off, which I thought was a travesty, and the Chargers started playing there.
Weird.
So actually, I went to a couple games there where you could see the yard marking still on the field while it was a baseball field. It was kind of disconcerting. You can't play baseball in a bowl. That's ridiculous. The end should be open, the outfield.
Yeah, that is weird. Yeah. Yeah, you can see the hash marks and stuff on when I think the Red Sox played the Florida team a couple of years ago, and you can see like the lines and stuff on the field. It's like, this is get a real field. Jeez.
Yeah, well, there's a problem getting cities to pay for fields.
I know.
I think it's a good. I mean, if the city shouldn't have to pay for something if they don't want it there, the people don't want to pay for it. I don't think baseball takes precedence over everybody in the entire city that may or may not want a team there.
You must be excited about Andrew Jones coming to the team. It seems like I said, that's kind of fallen under the radar, but I think he's going to have a pretty big year there.
Well, I hope he has a big year. He's not playing hurt like he was last year.
Yeah, he has. Didn't they sign him to just like a two-year deal or something? He's kind of got something to prove here if he wants to. He thought he was going to be making huge bucks, but, I mean, he's making more than you and I. I mean, let's be honest. But
he's making more than anybody on the team still.
Oh, really?
I think he does have the highest yearly salary. Yeah, look, here's the starting lineup. $14,100,000, Andrew Jones. The second on the list is $13 million, Rafael Furcal. Kent's only making $9 million, poor Jeff Kent. And Nomar, $8.5 million.
Wow. That's a lot of money for Furkel. I think my brother's a big Furkel fan. He's pretty good, huh?
Yeah, for a shortstop, he's consistently good, and he's an incredible shortstop. I mean, I don't know how many gold gloves he's won or if he has, but he should from what I've seen over the last couple of years.
Yeah, the gold glove. I'm down on the gold glove. It's too – they need, like, some kind of term limits on the gold glove because once one guy gets it, it seems like he never loses it, even though maybe he deserves to win like 30 gold gloves in a row, but it just kind of takes the steam out of it.
Yeah, you know what? I was listening to this Gene Shepherd show. He was talking about he was a radio host in the 60s in New York. But he was talking about, you know, people that win awards and everybody, you know, pays attention to. If you're doing it in Kansas City, nobody really cares or even notices, no matter, you know, if you're the best player or whatever, because nobody sees you and you never win. Your team never wins. But if you're doing it in New York or Boston or L.A. or maybe even San Francisco, Chicago, stuff like that, people notice. And that becomes, you know, that becomes the it gets into people's heads and they don't think of other people.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the baseball writers, you know, they remember the person that's making the highlight reel plays and all that. And psychologically, that kind of, you know, I don't think they look at stats that much. They can't. Otherwise, other people would be getting in there.
Yeah.
Getting their gold gloves and getting in the Hall of Fame and all that. It's very psychological and political as opposed to based on stats is what it should be. You know, for the most part.
No, I totally agree with that. I totally agree. And the my other pet peeve is the All-Star game. We need to change the voting somehow. And the one player, one team rule, I don't like either. I mean, you know, every team gets a player no matter what.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Even the guy who gets that, you know, even the guy from Kansas City, unless he's, like, actually legitimately an All-Star, usually there's at least one or two dudes on the All-Star team that they only made it because they play for Baltimore or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it seems like the, you know, the thing in kindergarten where there weren't any, you know, there aren't any losers. Of course there's losers. There's always losers. Jesus.
Yeah, it's like everybody gets a trophy. It's not, it doesn't, you know, it kind of dilutes the whole All-Star thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, how do you think the voting should be changed?
First, they have to take the voting out of the hands of the fans for the starting, for the starting lineup or however, for the starting positions. That, it just, with the internet, it's become farcical. And the big cities just dominate too much, and you know, it doesn't ever seems to really work out to my liking. And then I don't know how the rest of it goes because it's pretty convoluted. Because then, like, you know, the coach picks some and the players pick some, and so I don't know. I need to actually take a better look at it before I you know nail my proposition to the wall.
Or you could be a Moneyball head and just say that, you know, do it on pure stats. That's it. I don't care who's popular or what.
Yeah, I mean that would be
or start out,
better off,
you know.
Yeah, exactly. See, I'm extra excited to have you on the show because we kind of beat a lot of the horses dead here earlier in the show with the steroid stuff and you know, Girardi going to the Yankees. Were there any other off-season stuff outside of the Dodgers stuff that you know piqued your interest or that you want to, you know, have here on the record for the baseball special?
I don't pay any attention to stuff really in the off season. You know, the off season thing that of course excited me was that Torrey was coming to the Dodgers. I don't know whether he's still a great manager. He seems like it, but every time they talk to him here in L.A., it seems like, well, I'm still juggling lineups and stuff, and we'll have to see what happens. That's what he's been saying all through spring training, and so well, you know, what the biggest off season thing was the steroid report, obviously.
Yeah, what did you think of all that with Clemens getting all mixed up into it and the new congressional hearings and all the craziness that went on? What did you take out of all that?
You know what? It's funny. It's really polarizing the steroid issue. Some people are like, yeah, so what? You know, whatever advantage you can have to, you know, why not give everybody steroids? And then on the other side, there's people that I tend to more agree with saying, you know, somebody's really good, they try to make themselves better, or, you know, they're still good and they're trying to stay up there. To me, if I got to come down on one side or the other, yeah, it is cheating. And the people know it is because they have to do it in secret, and, you know, and
yeah.
they're sneaking around behind everybody's back and they're, you know, ordering stuff, you know, on the phone and having it sent to their mother's house, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, to me, it gives the people with the drugs an unfair advantage, and you know, apart from that, it screws up their body. It screws up your body. It ages you faster. It induces physiological changes, which are, I don't even think people know exactly yet what happens to you in old age if you're doing, you know, steroids for, you know, 20 years or 10 years or whatever.
Yeah. Well, look at all those dead professional wrestlers. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think they should get it out of baseball and level the playing field, as it were, back to where, you know, if somebody's doing well, they're just doing well. It was funny when the report came out, it said Dodgers immediately the same day on their website said, no current Dodgers involved in steroid scandal. No current, but there were, you know, Eric Gagne and who was the catcher that went to the Mets. I think he's in Florida now. There was two or three people on the Dodgers that were involved in it, too.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to have affected God, I can't remember the catcher's name. They traded him away to the Mets.
I think I know who you're talking about, but I can't remember his name either.
God. I'm real bad. You know, my brain's getting to the point where unless I read or heard of something that day or the day before, it kind of leaves my consciousness. But you know, suffice it to say that, I think it was present on just about every team. And it was so funny to see the basic Mark McGuire replay. Well, it wasn't really a replay with Clemens. He was just like, no, I never did. No.
Yeah.
McGuire took the advice of his lawyer and just said he refused to comment, which, you know, of course, in the Congress and the Court of Public Opinion meant, yes, he did it.
Yeah.
And the guy, you know, you could look at the guy. The guy looked like a monster for a while.
Yeah, you can't win, really, when you're busted like that. You know, you got to sort of fess up. Or it seems like now a lot of people are, they'll admit to it, but then have the little twist, you know, that they're, I was trying to get back from an injury or something, you know, where they try to, you know, twist it so there's a meritorious reason for their using the...
Yeah, actually, you know, one of the current Dodgers was involved in it was named in the report, and I think it's the backup catcher, Mark Sweeney.
All right, I'll be sure to heckle him
you'll have to, most of the time it's going to be Russell Martin, although Sweeney's been doing pretty decently hitting anyway, in spring training. I don't know if that's because of steroids or what, but he's doing okay.
I'm not sure. Now, my brother, he lives in San Diego. He went to a Dodgers game last year, and he's been raving about Dodger Stadium in Chavez Ravine ever since he went last year, so it must be some stadium.
Oh, it's a great stadium. It's built like we were discussing in the early 60s, so it's funny. It doesn't have any, you know, really non-essential architectural elements in it. It's a pure baseball stadium. There's nothing in your way, no matter where you're sitting in the whole place. You've got a perfect view no matter where you sit, which you can't say that for a lot of ballparks, even some of the newer ones.
Yeah.
Their attempts to go retro and make things kind of, you know, weird and quirky and all that, I think they take away from some of the views from different areas of the stadium. I mean, I know they still sell tickets right behind a pole in Fenway Park, don't they?
Yeah.
People pay for those seats? I can't believe it.
Absolutely. I'm sure they pay a lot of money for it.
Now, yeah, and they come out of the game with a crick in their neck or a constant list to port or starboard for a while because they've been leaning over the whole game.
That's why they sell beer.
Exactly. I really like the stadium. They keep trying to improve it, which means they're trying to make it so that they can make more money off it. But the fact remains that it was built for baseball. It's perfect for baseball, and it's probably one of the oldest. You know, being the early '60s, which doesn't seem that long ago, actually, in terms of baseball, it's one of the oldest stadiums left, with the exception of Fenway Park, Yankee Stadium, which is going out. And where do the Cubs play? Wrigley Field.
Yeah. Now, my brother says it's in almost like a suburban neighborhood or something like that. Is that accurate, or was he just crazy?
Well, I don't know what a suburb is in L.A. I mean, L.A. is just kind of a big sprawl.
I guess residential, maybe. That might be a better way to put it.
Yeah, it's a residential neighborhood. I mean, there's been a book or two written on the political and social elements surrounding putting that stadium there, because there was a whole community there that they just kind of, they either bought them out or threw them out or forced them out.
Huh.
And since they're all Hispanic people, they thought, who cares anyway, you know? But, you know, that was what was going on then. That was a march of progress, and that's what O'Malley wanted, was the stadium there, and he made the deal, and people were moved out, and now there's still a residential neighborhood surrounding it with houses that were there before, you know, way before Dodger Stadium was there. Some of them you can actually, a couple of them I think you can actually sort of see the field from the, no, you can't, no. I think they've kind of designed it so that the houses are all a little bit lower than the level of the playing field. I guess you could sit in Griffith Park somewhere and sort of watch the game if you had binoculars, but it'd be very difficult.
Yeah, just go home and watch it on TV at that point.
Yeah, but it is a beautiful stadium. I mean, I'm glad there's been some rumblings about building another stadium, and people are thinking, what? Why? This one works perfectly. It's been through 8 or 10 or 12 major earthquakes, and it's still there. There's no problem with it. It doesn't need to be retrofitted, and it's perfect. You know, it's a perfect stadium for the Dodgers to play in. And I'm also happy, even living now in this period where every stadium has some name of some team, every team stadium has a name of some company that bought the naming rights, that it's still actually Dodger Stadium. Mm-hmm. It's not Petco Park or Minute Maid Park, which actually used to, who sponsored the, I think it was the Rangers, no, what's it, the Astros?
Oh, the Astrodome?
Yeah, well, it used to be the Astrodome, but now it's either Minute Maid Park or something like that, but it actually used to be Enron Field. That changed really quickly about 15 years ago, 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And it was, when they first built it, it turned out to be a hitter's park, so people were calling it 10-run field.
Now, I know you go down to San Diego much. Have you been to the Petco there? Because I was there last year. I went to San Diego in the summer and actually got to see a game at Petco. It was pretty cool. It was different.
Yeah, I've been to Petco quite a few times. You know what? 4 or 5 times I've been there, 4 or 5 of the times I've been there, my dad works at a company down in San Diego, and they have one day every year where they go to a Padres game. And they buy out these seats that are right next to the Padres bullpen.
Yeah.
And what I was saying about sightline, and they're expensive seats. I mean, they're like bench seats, and they've got a buffet there, and you know as much beer and hot dogs and potato salad you can stuff down your gullet. But one cool thing about it is it's right in front of the bullpen for the Padres. The not cool thing about it is you can't see right field. So, because it's in the left field bullpen.
Yeah.
Then there's that big, you know, there's a jumbotron in the middle of, or something in the middle of center. No, there's that big black wall so that batters can see the ball. But the thing is so damn high up above you to the left. It's like, you know, 10, 15, 20 feet to the left up in the air. You see a ball heading towards left field, you look, and it just kind of disappears, and you have to listen to see what happened. If you hear a huge cheer, you know the guy caught it.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Well, I guess it's time now for the predictions part of the show. I'm really excited about this. I'm going to have my predictions at the end of the show when I do the closeout, but we've gotten everybody so far, 4 people so far. You're the 5th one here on the list, and winner, of course, will get bragging rights next year on the baseball special. So are you ready for predictions?
Yeah, I'll do my best.
All right, that's all we ask. We'll start with your home country here, National League West. Who you got?
It's going to be between the Dodgers and the Padres, and I hate to say it, but I bet the Dodgers will take it.
All right. Why do you hate to say it? You don't want to jinx them?
1, I don't want to jinx them, and 2, I say that, I automatically set myself up for disappointment if it doesn't happen. But yeah, those are, you know, and the Diamondbacks look good too. But it's gonna, I think, in the last couple months of the season, it's gonna be a dogfight between the Diamondbacks, the Padres, and the Dodgers. And I believe the Dodgers will squeak through on the top.
All right, the National League Central, or as I joked with Richard Dolan, the National League Cellar.
A lot of people have a lot of hopes for the Cubs because of superstition. What is that, years ending in 8 where they've done well?
Something like that. Well, it is the 100th anniversary, too, so.
Yeah,
that going
exactly.
Forward.
So, another dogfight, Cubs and Astros, and I think the Astros will come out on top.
Wow, nice. All right. I like that. You're the first to call for the Astros, so
yeah.
you're cornering the market on that one. The National League East.
I'm trying to think of a team that stands out in the National League East. Probably Mets again.
Okay.
I'm going mostly on records here and vague ideas about personnel changes and trends. I'm not going on, you know, heart and hope and then more importantly stats and specific players because I don't know them.
There you go. Well, Go Rightly used the Costanza method where he picked opposite of who everyone else will pick. Least likely. So I think you'll enjoy his picks when you hear them.
So he thinks the Giants are going to win the NL West, huh?
Oh, he thinks they're going all the way, baby.
Oh, of course he does.
I feel bad for Adam. His team is so awful that it was like I was at a wake when we were doing the interview. It was like... It's like polar opposites here with the Dodgers. Things are turning around so well for them, and the poor Giants are just wallowing in poor personnel decisions and all kinds of problems.
I keep telling him to change his affiliation and he have more fun, but he won't. It's funny, I'll send him emails about something. I'll get a lot of, you know, one or two-word expletive replies in the email.
Well, we really tapped into his Dodger hate in the in the interview, so you'll get a chance to hear.
Oh, okay. And I'm sure he said something about me, too.
Just that whole mind control thing with the Dodgers.
Yeah,
I think he thinks you're behind the whole
thing. Yeah, well, see, that's not illegal yet.
Exactly. They're ahead of the game.
You know what? I don't get bitter at baseball. Jesus. It's fun, but Christ.
All right, now the National League wild card. Who do you got?
Wow.
Yeah, this one's a tough one. There's, you know, six or seven teams that could fill that spot.
You were saying something. You know what? I'll go completely out on a limb. You were saying something about Phillies.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put them in.
All right.
It's totally stupid and completely wrong, I'm sure, but let's use the Costanza method. Well, if you use the Costanza method, then you'd say Devil Race or something, but.
Or the Nationals. That's who.
Nationals. Yeah, that's it.
But your pick is the Phillies.
Yeah, why not?
Okay. All right, now to the American League. The American League East, my stomping grounds.
Boston!
Nice, there you go. American League Central.
I don't know if Detroit's going to do anything. You think White Sox will come back? Ever since the World Series, they've been kind of, you know, hanging around the top there but not quite making it.
I think it's a two-horse race between the Indians and the Tigers.
You know, Indians haven't been there in quite a while. They used to be one of those, you know, always there.
Yeah.
So I'll go with Indians.
The American League West.
Angels.
And the wild card.
American League wild card?
Yeah.
You know what? I'll stick that with Chicago.
All right. Chicago White Sox?
Mm-hmm.
All right. No playoffs for the Yankees. Nice. I like that.
No, I think they're going to continue to trend downward to the delight of everybody across the country. And, yes, that is an emotional heart-based assessment.
That's fine. That's what I'm hoping for as well. I'm hoping for that as well. Now, who will face off in the World Series? Who you got as the American League champion and the National League champion?
I hate to say it, but I think it'll be Boston again.
Okay.
No, the only reason I hate to say it is I was so happy when they won it the first time, and the second time I was like, I was like, come on, don't turn these guys into the Yankees, too.
Yeah,
it's not anything against Boston. It's just that I'm so democratic about things that when somebody starts to dominate constantly, after a while I get tired of it. Everybody does.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I think it'll be Boston. You know what? Let's really screw up my emotional life for October and say Boston and L.A.
There you go. Nice, nice. Kimball would like that.
And it would be a nice full circle thing because they're spring training thing out here in the over the next couple days.
Exactly. Yeah, it would be one of those things where it would be karmic.
Yeah, exactly.
And
let's see what happens. I'm sure I'm going to be completely wrong on just about all of those, except for I hope the last one.
And who you have winning it all? Who's your World Series champions for 2008?
You know, if it's between Boston, I should pick somebody else besides Boston and LA. I'm going to keep my loyalty and say LA.
All right. Sounds good.
Although I don't think they can do it.
Yeah, everyone will think you're a genius if you get this right.
Yeah, I know. You know, I probably have the dumbest predictions of anybody because I don't pay too much attention to other teams except maybe their win-loss records and you know, where they were in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
The year before that, you know?
Yeah, I'm a little weak on the National League, but I follow the American League as close as I can pretty much.
Yeah, see, I'm exactly the opposite because Dodgers in the National League, yep. So I'm aware of those teams and the players because I see them when they come into town.
Exactly. That's why I like having the special here with you and Gorelli. You're my National League representative, so it works out well.
Who did he think was going to win?
He has the Giants going all the way.
Oh, okay.
Over in the Costanza Field, so.
Well, then I'm proud of him, and I'm glad he made those predictions.
Yeah,
I don't
Giants.
Think they're going to come true. They probably won't be any better than mine, but.
Giants over the Texas Rangers in the.
Rangers, really?
Oh, yeah. I told you, do the Costanza method. Where do you see these picks? They're all over the map. They're great.
Has he got the Brewers in there somewhere?
No, I think the Pittsburgh Pirates will be.
Oh, okay, that's right, of course.
All right, well, I guess that concludes the baseball talk of the show. Before we wrap it up here, what's coming up for you, Greg? What do you have coming down the line? I know you're going to be at UFO Retro 3 and all kinds of other exciting stuff, so, you know, plug away here.
Yeah, the Retro Conference is the last weekend in April. I think it's the 28th and 29th.
It is the 26th and 27th.
Oh, 26th and 7th. Thank you! I don't even speak at it. I don't even know. And Adam Gorelli speaking there. Chica Bruce, who I hardly ever see speaking anywhere that I know of. Ken Thomas, Nick Redfern, and then from the we actually have an old time contactee, Robert Short, who's still around and preaching the gospel of the Space Brothers. Thank goodness. Adam's going to do some music along with a guitarist. I guess Adam's going to play his theremin.
Yes, he was saying that.
I was actually playing the theremin, Adam's theremin, inside the Integratron last year, and the acoustics in there make it sound even weirder than it normally does. And it's going to be other music. There's Tim Cridlin, the torture king, basically a guy that sticks pins and needles through his skin and his tongue and all that. He has a Vegas act, actually.
Oh, nice.
That's how he makes his living, I think, apart from writing. He's going to be there. There's going to be a trip out to Giant Rock with Robert Short and possibly me. I'm not sure. And if the wind is right, I'm going to fly into the convention and scare everybody.
Wow, nice. Nice. I'm going to
really
do that.
The wind.
People can find out more on that at retroufo.com. That's the website
right.
For it. So check that out and make your plans now, folks, because you're running out of time here, which I know.
Yeah.
You're up against the clock on getting to this thing. So if you want to check it out, definitely do so, because all the cool folks from Banal of America Audio are going to be there, like you and Kimball and Gorelli and Nick Redfern. So it's like a party there. Obviously, people can check out UFO Mystic for all the great stuff from you and the awesome radio program, Radio Mysterioso. You've had some great episodes in the last few weeks. People can check all that stuff out, right, too?
Yeah, definitely. Within about a week or two after I have a guest on, I usually put it up for podcast on radioforall.net. I'm looking for another server to host or a system or somebody to host the podcast because Radio for All is very unreliable.
You're preaching to the choir here. I use them too, and my podcast feeds, it's hit or miss. You never know if it's going to be up or down.
You know why you use them? Because you asked me really early on.
Yes, you're to blame. Ladies and gentlemen, here's the man responsible for the poor podcast. We finally got him on the show, and we can...
Yeah, well, when I find a better one, or you do, let's tell each other about it, and then we can move over to that one and have a lot more reliable resource for people that want to listen to him, because internet radio is not live radio, it's podcasting.
Exactly, yeah.
I like doing the shows live. I don't know why. I just really like that. I like being at a station with a bunch of controls and places I can play music and having somebody there or on the phone and basically doing it live, whether people call in or not. I don't really mind. It's nice when they do. But, you know, 99% of the listeners come through download.
Exactly.
Because people can't remember every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific to listen to my show, but they can remember, oh, here's somebody I missed, and they can go download that. And last week it was Peter Robbins, and we only talked about UFOs in the last, like, 40 minutes. The rest of the time he was talking about his adventures in Afghanistan and India in the late 60s or in the early 70s.
Yeah, Peter's great. I'm hoping we can get him back on the show soon. He's just a storyteller of amazing proportions.
Yeah, exactly. And next week I'm going to have a show having nothing whatsoever to do with UFOs, which I've done once before when I talked to my flying instructor. One of the co-authors of Weird California is going to be on with me, Joe Osterley, who actually used to be a writer for National Lampoon when they went on the web.
Oh, nice.
And whatever you think of National Lampoon, he is, at least after about 1978 when they stopped being funny. he's been a stand-up comedian. He's acted in improv theater, and he makes at least part or maybe most of his living from being funny. So what we're going to do is go through the history of comedy and play a bunch of comedy records and discuss why they're funny and laugh about them and just the whole subject of humor and satire and what makes that attractive and why it's a necessary, you know, social lubricant or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
It's going to be 2 hours just on humor.
Nice, nice. So it's like a baseball special of sorts. So you got to go off topic sometimes. There's life outside of UFOs, folks. That's the point of this show. You just can't get all wrapped up in just UFOs and forget about the rest of the real world.
Right. Oh, the other thing is I'm speaking at the Roswell Conference again this year, too.
Nice. All right. I'm sure we'll hear more about that at UFO Mystic anyway, right?
Yes, as the time draws nearer, yes.
Well, Greg, thank you so much for coming back here on the baseball special. I really appreciate it. Like I said, people can find out more from UFO Mystic, and you post there about Radio Mysterioso, so they can find out about the show there. And, of course, you're going to be at the UFO Retro Con 3, April 26th and April 27th, at the world-famous Integratron in Landers, California, and find out about that at RetroUFO.com. Greg, like I said, I can't thank you enough. Second appearance here this season. I enjoy talking to you so much. Hopefully we can meet up soon this time. For real this year sometime. If I'm not out there at the RetroCon, I'll be out in San Diego at some point. So hopefully our paths.
Tell me when you're coming down to San Diego, and I'll come down. We'll go catch a Padres game.
Sounds good to me. All right, thanks again. Take it easy.
Thank you, Tim.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
That does it for the second annual BOA Audio Baseball Special. Huge uber thanks to all five great guests who appeared on the program: Paul Kimmel, Lauren Coleman, Richard Dolan, Adam Gorightly, and Greg Bishop. Tremendous guys. Can't wait to talk to them in 2009 to kick off the baseball season and see how these predictions size up. Speaking of which, now I will reveal my picks. That way, we can all be on a fair playing field. Here we go. Here are my picks for the 2008 baseball season. American League East, the Boston Red Sox. American League Central, the Detroit Tigers. American League West, the Seattle Mariners. American League Wild Card, the New York Yankees. In the NL East, I have the New York Mets. In the National League Central, the Chicago Cubs. In the NL West, Arizona Diamondbacks. NL Wildcard, the LA Dodgers. And facing off in the World Series will be the Detroit Tigers and the Chicago Cubs. And my pick for the World Champions of 2008, I'm pulling a Kimball, I'm picking the Tigers, and I think they've got all of the necessary intangibles to go all the way this year, and I'm sticking by that prediction. We'll see who wins in November. It's a long way off, but we're going to put these predictions in the vault and dig them out in the beginning of November and see who has the baseball prognostication powers. I'm putting my money on Lauren Coleman, to tell you the truth. I have a feeling Lauren Coleman is going to score huge, and we're going to be stunned. Anyway, if you lasted this long, folks, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it. Like I said at the beginning of the show, the baseball special is about one thing and one thing only. A lesson I learned over the course of the last year, definitely. You got to have other stuff going on. You can't just make the paranormal your life. It's all right to live within the world of the paranormal, but don't live it. Don't live of it, if you know what I mean. That's what life's all about, stopping smelling the roses. And, you know, saying, hey, wait a minute, this paranormal shit's been going on for a long time, so let's kick back and relax and talk a little bit about something else for a change. We're already way, way past 3 hours at this point, so we're going to blow off BOA Audio listener feedback. Want to throw in a plug, though, for the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. Make it your hangout, make it your clubhouse, it's where we all hang out. It's theusofe.com, the official BOA forum. Check that out. heading toward the close of the show here now. It is time for the thanks part of the program. You know them, you love them, you've heard of them every week here on the show. Soon you're going to be hearing from them. They are the infamous and outstanding BOA staff. Leslie Chiron, Arlie, Joe V, Tina Senna, and Rochelle Hawks. We say it week in and week out. If you're only listening to BOA audio and you're not checking out BOA on a 7-day basis, you are really missing out on some top-notch esoteric material. BenAllOfAmerica.com. Make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. Donation time, donation time. This is the part of the show where I ask you to make donations. You know how to do it. You go to BenAllOfAmerica.com, you click the PayPal button, and you make a donation. 2-hour-long international calls, 5 interviews in 1 episode, hopefully down the line some trips to various conferences to do some on-site reporting. That's what BOA Audio is all about. How do we keep this kind of standard up? Through donations from the folks who listen to the show. The program is free. We rely on your donations. We're like the Charlie Rose Show, only a little more esoteric, but we do need your donations. You heard me run down how to do it already. PayPal button at BOA. Click it. Make a donation. No donation is too small. And all donations go towards keeping BOA free of charge for all of our great listeners and readers the world over. Next week on the program, it is going to be a very fascinating interview. I'm not even going to talk about it because it's not going to be taped till Friday. And you know how touch and go things are sometimes. This guy may not work out. You don't know. So, all I'm going to say is one word, and you can do your own research on this till we talk again next week. And that word is Rumspringa. That's it. That's all I got for you. Rumspringa. Next week on BOA. It's going to be a Rumspringa Festivus, and it's going to knock your socks off, I hope. And on that note, we don't have anything left to say. As I said earlier in the program, though, thank you so much for listening, folks. This was a long-ass episode, but in a lot of ways, it is in keeping with what the baseball special should be. It should be nearly baseball game length, which is what this thing turned out to be. It was the 2nd annual BOA Audio Baseball Special. We'll be back next year for another celebration of America's pastime. And, of course, next week with more off-kilter esoteric audio. Come on back for that. Until then, this is Tim Benall, thanking you for listening and signing off.